Like every other NDAA that Congress has approved in recent years, the version for the coming fiscal year is chock full of wasteful programs that can hardly be justified on national security grounds. In an open letter recently, an ideologically diverse coalition of watchdog groups warned that the House bill could dump even more money into a $6 billion program to produce new engines for the F-35 fighter jet, itself a notorious boondoggle. As Connor Echols of Responsible Statecraft reports, the House NDAA sets aside $503 million for the new Adaptive Engine Transition Program, which would replace engines for most F-35s with a design that had previously been rejected. The coalition of watchdog groups wrote in their open letter recently that over the service life of the fleet, the F-35 program is projected to cost the American people $1.7 trillion. This is roughly $5,000 for every man, woman, and child in the nation, the groups pointed out. More broadly, Lindsay Kashagarian of the National Priorities Project observed last week that slashing $100 billion from the U.S. military budget could fund a range of progressive priorities, including the clean energy and child care provisions of President Biden's beleaguered Build Back Better initiative. Merely reversing the House's proposal to pile $37 billion on top of Biden's request, meanwhile, could help pay for provisions for extending child and earned income tax credits, and provisions for improved health care access and Medicare hearing benefits for seniors, Kashagarian noted. Even $100 billion is actually a modest cut when it comes to the Pentagon, she argued, adding we could cut much more and end up even safer. But when that $37 billion or $100 billion can do so much good elsewhere, it's unacceptable to put it in the Pentagon.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means to appoint.
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though, we learn.
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah.
Ya khaliqa kull shay'in wa waritha.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Please stay with us. So, dear listeners, we are talking about our worship, our ibadat, our different forms of servitude to Allah. And more specifically, we are talking about how we need to be careful that these different forms of worship, these different forms of the servitude to Allah in our ubudiyah, it must not go down a wrong track. Now, we find that there are certain wrong tracks when it comes to ubudiyah that are common. So, for example, one of them is the idea of riya, showing off, and doing these acts of worship for other people. Another such danger which can be found if one is not careful in one's ibadat and one's worship and one's ubudiyah of the Almighty Allah is that one's worship and Gnostic practices and zuhud and asceticism and this spiritual wayfaring strengthens one's own selfishness. It strengthens one's own self-centeredness, and it strengthens one's own oneness. Now, when it comes to these spiritual wayfaring, this seir wa suluk, this spiritual wayfaring, the ultimate goal is unity with Allah. Now, of course, this unity with Allah is something that might take a whole lifetime for an individual to attain. In some cases, one cannot attain because of reasons that are specific to each individual. And on some cases, we have heard that the shuhada, the martyrs, they have been able to reach these kind of states much, much quicker, sometimes even overnight. But now, this is the ultimate goal of the spiritual wayfaring and the ubudiyah. Now, what happens when one becomes selfish and self-centered, of course, is that instead of one becoming one with the Almighty, or to reach this tawheed, ultimate unity, one ends up focusing on their own self. One ends up becoming self-centered. One starts to believe that they are the center of the universe and they are, you know, powerful and strong and in control and independent. And this is probably one of the most dangerous things that occurs on this path of ubudiyah, which one must be very, very careful of. And of course, when one starts to become more self-centered and more arrogant and more self-centered, more selfish as well, then they start to say improper things, they start to say abnormal expressions, they start to lose control, and indeed a very dangerous situation to find oneself in.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah, ya
Mannan, IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an fi ma sa'ina. Ya Allah, ya Mannan, haqqiq amanina. أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الخير.
And now we invite you to listen to Brother Nu'man Ali Khan.
وَاعْبُدُوا رَبَّكُمْ وَافْعَلُوا الْخَيْرَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ.
And enslave yourselves and worship your master. In other words, now that, you know, ruku' and sajda is done, that's not the only ibadah. You understand ibadah is more than that. Ibadah is an attitude. I'm a slave. I'm here to serve. Ibadah is how I walk, how I talk, how I think about myself, how I think about others. Your entire attitude gets transformed because of prayer. Prayer is actually a very big part of a Muslim's personality, just our behavior. Now, prayer, we think of it as a behavior. Prayer, actually, the daily salawat, they're supposed to have a really direct effect on how we think, our attitudes, our thought process, our mentality. Between Dhuhr and Asr, my thoughts are going to be impacted by the Dhuhr prayer. Between Asr and Maghrib, my thoughts, my priorities are going to be impacted by the Asr prayer. It's the way a Muslim carries himself as a abd. That's shape. That's what the salawat do. You know how pillars hold a building together? Hold our day together. They hold our day together. And between the between hours are dictated by what quality of salat we have. The salat itself becomes empty. The salat becomes just cardiovascular exercise. a review session for Suratul Ikhlas and Suratul Kawthar. Because you don't have time for anything more. You know? If it just becomes that, you're not going to see a change in your personality.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parsetoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were saying, which was some of the dangers which one encounters on this path of ubudiyyah, on this path of the servitude to Allah, the worship of Allah, the obedience to Allah, I mean the worship to Allah. Some of the dangers which come about, we had said that one of the dangers that can come about is this action of riya, which we should definitely talk about in another program. The other thing that we said, which is one of the dangers that comes about upon this path of ubudiyyah and this path of the servitude and the worship and the obedience to Allah, is that instead of one's focus being upon Allah, one's focus turns towards the self. And we had said that sometimes these acts of worship and these Gnostic practices and this asceticism and this spiritual journey, instead of leading towards Almighty Allah and this sort of oneness with Almighty Allah, in the metaphysical sense, of course, one ends up just strengthening their own self-centeredness, strengthening their own selfishness, and strengthening their own oneness. And what ends up happening is that an individual begins to lose control, of course. They start to say improper things. They start to use abnormal expressions. And it has been seen in history where individuals call themselves God, or people become deviated to an extent where they are no longer practicing the rites and the rituals and the laws of Islam, of course known as the Sharia. And so this is one of the dangers, and it is quite dangerous, because the more one becomes focused upon the self, the less one will focus upon Allah. And the whole purpose of ubudiyyah and the whole purpose of this worship to Allah and this servitude to Allah and this obedience to Allah, of course, the common denominator is Allah. And so that is what our focus should be. It is interesting, but we have seen that among these saliks, these spiritual wayfarers, these ascetics, these urafa, these devotees, we find throughout history that there were persons who practiced asceticism and self-purification, yet their exercises only end up aggravating the impurity that was within their heart and the darkness that was within themselves. Now, of course, you know, when an individual begins to do these kind of self-purification exercises, one begins to strengthen their soul and focus on this spiritual wayfaring, you know, they end up realizing how strong they are, how powerful they are. And truly an individual who is spiritually powerful, that individual is much stronger than somebody who is merely physically powerful. And in many cases, when individuals start to go higher up in the levels of ubudiyyah, it is highly encouraged to have a teacher, or to have a master, have a ustad. An ustad is a teacher who helps one to be able to go through this maze of spiritual wayfaring, especially at the higher levels, levels that are not easily accessible to, for example, individuals like myself. But again, from the beginning to the end of the spiritual wayfaring and this divine spiritual journey, And this migration towards Allah, of course, is for one to be careful of the intrusions of shaitan and to always, always focus as much as they can upon the Most Merciful, the Almighty, Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website, www.parstoday.com.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
There's a very beautiful hadith from the 8th Imam, Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, where he describes how every hope or every desire has to have action coupled with that. He who asks for paradise from Allah but is not patient over trials and difficulties has ridiculed himself. He who comes to God for shelter from the fire of hell but does not leave his worldly desires has ridiculed himself. It's a very beautiful hadith. We can spend lots of time on this. He who thinks about death but does not make himself ready for death has ridiculed himself. So we cry, we mourn for death, yet I live my life the way I'm going to live forever. Literally, I don't know if God is laughing at us. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's the right thing to say. But I ridiculed myself. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it. Yeah, or the Imam to describe it in a better manner. He who remembers God but does not hasten in meeting Him, does not prepare himself to meet God, has ridiculed himself. So this is the Imam is describing what tawakkul is that in every one of these things, my trust and hope was in God. God can seek my protection from Him, I seek forgiveness from Him, I want to meet Him. Everything has to do with God. But I need to take steps towards that action. I need to make sure that I am going towards what God wants from me. And if I don't do that second part, then I have not done tawakkul. I have done something else. I have ridiculed myself. And this is what the Imam alayhi salam is describing tawakkul. And this is a very important concept to understand.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. الذي أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Rather than going around the world collecting military allies and imposing sanctions on countries that do not wish to align with the United States, China invites partners to collaborate on mutually beneficial basis. We now present you an article written by Dr. George Koo, the founder and former managing director of International Strategic Alliances. The piece is titled Disintegration of Unipolar World Begins. The article was published by the Asia Times. In April, I was invited to speak about the U.S.-China bilateral relationship. For the title of the speech, I chose, Pushing China's Head Underwater Won't Make America Great Again. Recent developments suggest that an updated title would be, Pushing China's Head Underwater Will Hasten America's Own Demise. There are two reasons for fine-tuning my title. First, the United States' deliberate tactics to obstruct China's growth and expansion have failed miserably while inflicting more hardship on Americans. The American people are paying a ghastly price for Washington's obsession with China. Second, priorities of America's foreign policy are not making any sense. The most recent example is the announcement by President Joe Biden that the United States will contribute $200 billion to the G7 pool of funds to compete with China's Belt and Road Initiative, the BRI. It's hard to tell where Biden is going to find that money. Even if all Group of Seven nations contribute their share of funds, it will be even harder to figure out to how they can implement the Belt Road Initiative-like projects in the developing world. Most probably, they would have to subcontract work to China, which knows how to implement it. On top of Biden's dream of grandeur, he's sending billions of dollars worth of arms and weapons to Ukraine to prolong the conflict with Russia. Bipartisan approval is easy when it comes to making war. By contrast, to relieve the inflationary pressure on America's domestic economy, Joe Biden is proposing to forgive 18 cents per gallon, or 4.76 cents per liter, of federal tax on gasoline for the three summer months. Wow, billions of dollars to compete with China and Russia and an 18-cent discount for the American motorist. In California, a gallon of gasoline has gone over $6, or $1.59 a litre. Saving 18 cents per gallon from a fill-up will barely cover the cost of a cup of coffee. In the United States, prices of everything has gone up. Inflation looms. Nay, inflation at 8.8% is already the highest in the past 40 years. Soon the American motorist won't even get a cup of coffee from his gas tax saving. Biden does not deny that Americans are facing inflation. He blames the inflation on Russian President Vladimir Putin and his special operation in Ukraine. He urges the American public to endure this for as long as it takes in order to defeat Putin, hardly encouraging words. Of course, most American people are not aware that it has been the U.S.-led North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, that baited Putin over the decades into the conflict with Ukraine. Washington has since congratulated itself for successfully mounting a proxy war, getting Ukrainians to fight the Russians. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin even claimed that the war meets the objectives to wear down the strength of Russia, albeit at the expense of Ukrainian casualties and Ukrainian property. NATO celebrated a summit at the end of June where Sweden and Finland were formally included as new members. The organization accused China of not condemning Russia's special operations in Ukraine and therefore not standing with NATO. At its NATO summit, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South Korea were invited as observers as a signal that NATO's expansion plans now include the North Pacific. Just to make sure nobody misses that intention, for the first time NATO identified China as a potential threat and a systematic challenge. So what constitutes China's threat to the security of NATO members? Apparently, it is the fact that China has dominated manufacturing of goods and prices that the West cannot compete with. China's gross domestic product, or GDP, continues to grow, and that makes NATO members nervous. West, led by the United States, has repeatedly accused China of violating rule-based international order. The most recent action by the Biden White House was to impose sanctions on goods made in Xinjiang province, alleging human rights abuses in China's Xinjiang province. In response, China, on the day after the conclusion of the NATO summit, announced the placement of an entire order for 292 commercial jetliners worth more than $37 billion with Airbus, the European consortium, and none to Boeing, the other major plane maker. This was a harsh, attention-getting message from China in response to President Biden's endless innuendos and baseless insults and a signal that China is ready to play hardball with Washington. China's other message to the countries in the European Union, many of which are members of NATO, the Airbus order reaffirmed that China can be a major economic partner and poses no threat to the security of the European Union. Inflation in the European Union is rapidly getting out of control because of the war in Ukraine and the US imposed sanctions on Russia. If Joe Biden thought he was driving a stake into the heart of Russia's economy, he miscalculated. Vladimir Putin turned around and pegged Russia's energy exports to the ruble. Consequently, the value of the ruble against the euro has reached a 7-year high. The artificial shortage in world oil caused by the US sanctions on Russian oil has not hurt Russia. It makes money selling its oil to China, to India, and to other buyers at higher prices. However, major nations in the European Union, especially France, Germany and Italy, are energy importers and they are beginning to question the wisdom of following the US leadership. The world is beginning to see the difference between currencies based on assets and the American dollar, based on the full faith and credit of the US government. In other words, the Federal Reserve's printing press. Central banks of various countries are beginning to lighten their dollar holdings in favor of other reserve currencies, the most popular being China's renminbi. According to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, the US dollar's share of the global currency reserves has fallen to its lowest point in more than 2 decades. To take advantage of the availability of Russian oil at favorable discount, India entered a rupee for ruble deal and get around paying in dollars. For the first time, India bought coal from Russia with the Chinese renminbi. While the G7 and then the NATO summit meeting took place in Europe, it was China's turn to host the BRICS meeting, which it did virtually. At the 2022 BRICS summit, Beijing invited many non-member countries as observers. Formed back in 2009, BRICS consists of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It is not a military alliance, but it's meant to promote collaboration for peace, for security and global economic development. Compared with the G7, BRICS has three times the population, but only about 70% of the G7's gross domestic product, or GDP. At the 2022 BRICS summit, Argentina and the Islamic Republic of Iran formally applied to join BRICS. Adjusted for purchasing parity, the gross domestic product for BRICS Plus would surpass that of G7, and there is a proposal afoot to create a new global reserve currency based on the basket of BRICS Plus currencies as an alternative to the US dollar. Rather than going around the world collecting military allies and imposing sanctions on countries that do not wish to align with the United States, China invites partners to collaborate on mutually beneficial basis. Since it was initiated in 2013, China's Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, has launched more than 13,000 projects in 165 countries, valued at nearly $1 trillion. Most of the Belt and Road Initiative projects have to do with upgrading badly needed infrastructure, which leads directly to a boost in the recipient country's economy. There is now a high-speed rail link from China through Central Asia to Moscow, Russia, and onwards to Rotterdam on the Atlantic coast. 25 out of 31 Latin American countries are participants in the Belt and Road Initiative, as is most of Africa. At the just-concluded Group of 20 summit, the divide between the US-led Western bloc and China, Russia, and the non-aligned members of the G20 became quite clear. The summit concluded without the usual group photo of smiling state leaders and no joint declarations expressing optimistic steps for the future. Every year, China graduates 8 times as many students in STEM or science, technology, engineering, and mathematics than the United States. These human resources power developments in high technology for China. The more pressure the US exerts on to stifle China's advance, the more determined the Chinese will be to find their own technical advances and skirt around American roadblocks.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, relationship between parents and children. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In today's lessons, we will be talking about the relationship between parents and children. In the Islamic lifestyle, you realize that there are so many things that are being expected of a parent or of a child upon the other party. A child is expected to treat their parent with respect. A child is expected to treat their parent with a little bit more respect and more understanding. And the same also is expected from a parent towards their child. Now, we want to talk about a few mistakes that have been realized, that we realize or we gain, that have been studied or have been seen from parents doing it upon their children. You see, parents are trying their best to upbring their kid in a good manner, to make them good people, to make them good personalities in the future. So a parent is trying his best, but still, as the parent is trying to bring up the kid, you'll realize that they're doing a few mistakes in their lives that will make his results not be the same results as he needed, as he's looking up to. That will destroy the results. He's trying his best to make sure that the kid becomes a good person in future, becomes a good leader maybe, a good person in the society and such like things. But in the end, they end up doing a few mistakes. So what are some of these mistakes? I will set one amongst them. It might be possible that some will put all the blame on the parents alone, because of the fact that they have much experience in life and they were expected to be forgiven and possesses a wider heart and mind and more understanding to life than the kid does. So based on this, we will not forgive children, upholding blames on them. However, because the responsibility of parents are great, we will look into the mistakes of parents only for now, which if it is treated well, if it is put in a good manner and we look at it in a good manner, we will realize that the gap between children and parents will be filled. Now, it's upon us to realize, to know that whatever we see from a kid, whether it's a mistake, whether it's a good deed, sometimes, or most of the times, this particular deed the kid is doing or the kid has just done is a result of the upbringing of the parents of that particular kid, of the guide of that particular kid. What we need to understand is that it's not just from the parent side, but it could also be from the child side. Now, we will get back to see or to know more about the few mistakes that a parent does while he or she is trying to upbring their kid. Stay tuned. Don't be far from us.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is A to Z. We are talking about the relationship between a child and a parent, the relationship between children and parents. Now, some parents treat their children very harshly, the way they were treated by the parents as if they inherited this harshness. You see, a parent may be treating their kid or their child in a way that he or she was treated before with his parents or with her parents. This is not what we're expecting. This is not what is expected in Islam. Islam states that you should treat your kid according to the times that the child is living, not according to the time that you lived or the time that your parents lived. So some parents treat their children very harshly. Here, we are not going to discuss this matter and study the effect of our relationship for the future of the family's relationship. Rather, we want to tell these parents who are fond of dealing with such negative relationship that remember the effect and your hatred on harsh treatment your parents used to do on you. The first thing you should have in your mind is that you should remember, when my parents brought me up, they used to be harsh to me. What did that do to me? It really destroyed me from inside. It destroyed my confidence. It made me less confident than I am. Maybe I would have been more confident in the future or in my life if they would have treated me with a little bit of some kindness and not the harsh treatment. So how can a father who lived in such a harsh condition and treatment feel good to see his son in such a situation? Is it good for a father to always shout and beat his children for a minor mistake? And you know, like to be talking in a wild and horrible voice in the house as if he is a small executioner? So we need to check on how we treat our children and reduce the harshness on how we're treating them. And in the end, we definitely are going to get good results. Thank you so much for listening. Fi amanillah. Bye.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the House Select Committee that is investigating last year's riot at the U.S. Capitol said on Saturday, 9th of July, that testimony it received from former White House counsel Pat Cipollone last week corroborated key elements of testimony that former top White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson provided to the panel last month. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Xander Landon. The article was published by Newsweek and is titled Cipollone Corroborated Key Elements of Hutchinson's Testimony. In the United States, the House Select Committee that is investigating last year's riot at the U.S. Capitol said on Saturday, 9th of July, that testimony it received from former White House counsel Pat Cipollone last week corroborated key elements of testimony that former top White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson provided to the panel last month. During a public hearing, Cassidy Hutchinson claimed that former President Donald Trump was aware that some of his supporters were armed during his rally on 6th of January 2021. But he didn't care since they weren't there to hurt him. In addition, she alleged that Donald Trump tried to grab the steering wheel of the presidential limousine when he was told he couldn't join his supporters at the Capitol during the deadly insurrection on 6th of January. After Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, the committee subpoenaed Pat Cipollone to testify, which he did in a closed-door meeting on Friday. CNN reported on Saturday, 9th of July, that during the meeting, Cipollone invoked executive privilege when responding to some questions from the panel. However, in a statement, Tim Mulvey, a spokesperson for the committee, said there were no agreements during the interview to limit questioning in accordance with executive privilege. In our interview with Mr. Cipollone, the committee received critical testimony on nearly every major topic in its investigation, reinforcing key points regarding Donald Trump's misconduct and providing highly relevant new information that will play a central role in its upcoming hearings. Tim Mulvey said, according to CNN, this includes information demonstrating Donald Trump's supreme dereliction of duty. The testimony also corroborated key elements of Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony. Allegations of some pre-interview agreement to limit Pat Cipollone's testimony are completely false. Newsweek has reached out to Donald Trump's press office for comment. During an interview on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday, Representative Stephanie Murphy, a Democrat from Florida and a member of the January 6th House panel, said that during the interview, Cipollone claimed privilege on conversations that related to the advice he provided directly to the former president or conversations with the former president. But I think we still got a lot of relevant information from him, and it provides us another perspective on what was happening in the White House in those weeks running up to 6th of January 2021 that were so critically important, she said. In an interview with ABC News' This Week program on Sunday, Representative Adam Kinzinger, an Illinois Republican who also sits on the House committee, said during Cipollone's interview, at no point was there any contradiction of what anybody said, referring to other witnesses who have testified before the House panel. In an interview on Saturday, 9th of July, with MSNBC's The Katie Fang Show, Donald Trump's niece, Mary Trump, said The former president is terrified following Pat Cipollone's interview with the committee. I think this might be the first time in his entire life that even he can't deny that the walls may indeed be closing in, Mary Trump said. She added, the amount of evidence that we've seen coming out of these committee hearings is overwhelming. But even more troubling for him is the witnesses are now coming forward are increasingly important in terms of access and in terms of their positions in his administration, and they're unimpeachable. So it is not at all surprising that Donald Trump would pull his punches when it comes to Pat Cipollone. The former president's niece, Mary Trump, added, to say that Donald is terrified is accurate and also an understatement. I think this might be the first time in his entire life that even he can't deny that the walls may indeed be closing in.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. The next recommendation is that you should reveal the enemy's lies, deceptions, and psychological warfare. At the time of Imam, there was no internet, nor did satellites exist in this form. In those days, Imam used to say that the enemy fought against us with his pen. Imam was aware of this. Today, the issue is not about pens, rather it is about cyberspace, satellites, and psychological warfare. One that is comprehensive and rampant everywhere. You should not let the enemy's psychological warfare impact the country. Let me cite a small example of psychological warfare. They stole our oil on Greek shores. Then our self-sacrificing and valiant soldiers made up for it and confiscated the enemy's ship carrying oil Then the enemy accused Iran to theft via his comprehensive propaganda and media empire. Who is a thief? You stole our oil. We took it back from you. Taking back stolen property is not theft. It is you who are thieves.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Americans order the Greek government, and they obey by stealing our oil. Well, these are instances of psychological warfare. You should confront such psychological warfare, examples of which occur every day. The next recommendation is that you must make the most of the people's faith for producing good deeds. The people are pious and have faith. This faith can produce good actions. You can do this. Our magnanimous Imam was a master at this. Imam was a genius in making the most of the people's faith for producing good deeds. The next recommendation is that you should not let some people pretend that the country has reached a dead end. This is some people's job right now in cyberspace. Now some individuals do it out of negligence or they are paid to do it. I do not know, but they want to pretend that the country has reached a dead end. No! The country will not reach a dead end. This happened at the time of Imam too. At that time, some people wrote in newspapers that the country had reached a dead end. Imam said, no, it is you who reached the dead end. The Islamic Republic will not reach a dead end. He said that it was they who had reached a dead end. This is the truth of the matter.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The EU's tourism industry is currently thriving, but make no mistake, businesses facing huge overheads are struggling to turn a profit. In its summer economic forecast, the European Commission has revised growth downwards and inflation upwards. The bloc is concerned Russia is going to turn off all its gas supplies.
This risk has become more than just a hypothetical scenario for which we need to prepare. So a storm is possible.
For millions, the storm is already here. Governments are accused of not providing support to deal with the cost of living crisis arising from sanctions against Russia, but can find money for other causes. The EU is providing 9 billion euro to Ukraine to run the country and has sent a separate 2 billion for military equipment. This is in addition to the huge amounts of money being spent on Ukraine by individual member states, most of whom are in NATO, where military spending is also increasing. Not to mention the EU is developing its own army. Citizens say fueling the Ukraine war is costing the EU too much.
It's time to be talking about peace, not about weapons or providing more financial aid to the war.
If the parties could come together and agree a peace, that would be wonderful, but you know, I'm not sure that's happening, right?
Yes, of course we need to end the war, but the problem is nobody knows how to end the war, you know?
The head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, has been facing pressure during a visit to the European Parliament.
NATO, along with the US and the EU, were never a defensive mechanism, not before the war and not after it. They are offensive. Ukraine has been sacrificed for their interests.
Experts warn the growing social crisis in the EU will have dire consequences for the political establishment. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have condemned US President Joe Biden's visit to occupied Palestine. Scores of people in the blockaded enclave protested against Biden's visit while shouting slogans in support of resistance actions against the occupying regime. U.S. President Joe Biden arrived in Tel Aviv on Wednesday to kick off his first trip to the region since taking office. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas accused Joe Biden of putting the interests of the Israeli regime ahead of the legitimate rights of Palestinians and regional security.
The President of the United States of America carries nothing but unlimited support for the Zionist entity, its security and prosperity, and a package of false promises to the Palestinians. The United States' adoption of Zionist plans is based on uprooting our people from their land by force and obliterating their identity and history in favor of the Zionist entity.
During his trip to the occupied territories, Joe Biden visited U.S.-funded missile interception systems, including the so-called Iron Dome and Iron Beam. The Islamic Jihad movement says the U.S. administration only aims to prolong the Israeli occupation and support its aggression against the Palestinian people.
Joe Biden's visit comes to serve the interests of the Zionist entity, and he's not welcomed in our land. We believe that the U.S. and the Zionist regime share the same interests. Joe Biden has ignored the suffering of the Palestinian people and continues to support the Zionist regime.
Palestinians have warned against the dangers of Biden's agenda and the attempts to integrate the Israeli regime into the region and expand the circle of normalization with it. Analysts say that all U.S. administrations have adopted the same biased policy towards the Israeli regime.
When it comes to Israel and Israeli security, there is no difference at all between Republicans and Democrats. What we are witnessing today is that Democratic President Joe Biden's support for the deal of the century and his support for further normalization between Israel and the Arab countries.
Palestinians are calling on the free people of the world to reject the arrogance and policies of the United States that target the region's security and stability.
Observers say that Joe Biden's visit will only give the Israeli regime the green light to further violate the rights of the Palestinian people. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
On Wednesday, Italy's Prime Minister Mario Draghi announced his resignation at the end of a bruising day in which his executive survived a confidence vote on a cost-of-living bill in the Senate, with one of the biggest parties in the government alliance, the Five Star Movement, abstaining from voting. In a statement, Draghi said that the pact of trust at the base of the government's action and the conditions to carry out the executive's program no longer exist. However, President of the Republic Sergio Mattarella rejected Draghi's resignation in an attempt to break the political impasse, inviting the former European Central Bank president to address Parliament and to assess the situation.
I have already said that there won't be a second Draghi government. Let me say, this executive has dealt with the ongoing tensions pretty well.
The Five Star Movement pooled its support for the government over a bill aimed at helping businesses and households with skyrocketing energy prices and a provision for a trash incinerator in Rome, a project the once anti-establishment party staunchly opposes. The Mario Draghi government was formed after ex-Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte's second executive collapsed in February 2021. Draghi was appointed to address the consequences of the pandemic and to manage about 200 billion euros in grants and low-interest loans from the European Union for a radical restructuring of Italy's economy.
As usual, Draghi destroys the small and medium